White Rocket Entertainment. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 253.
This is the AU Wishbone, continued off-season coverage, brought to you by WhiteRocketBooks.com and by Audible at audibletrial.com/AUWishbone. Now here are John Ringer and that other guy.
Woo-hoo!
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with AwarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we are here this week to talk about National Signing Day, among a couple other things, which was actually last Wednesday, but hey, better late than never, right? We do our shows on Monday, so that's just how it works out. Now, We're not doing a video special this year in suit and tie. Was that an oversight, or is that just like luck, or how did that happen?
No, I think it's just.
Is it a commentary on this year's class, John? Is that what you're? Are you sending a subtle message to the Auburn family by not doing it this year?
Wait. Are you saying you're not wearing a tie?
Oh crap!
I dressed up for nothing.
We do not have the video feed on tonight. I'm sorry. You dressed up for nothing.
Dang it.
Yep. So this is not a subtle slam by you at the Auburn recruiting class. You're actually happy with this recruiting class. Is that correct?
I am very happy with this recruiting class. Is it perfect? No, but it's very, very good, and we should all be very happy with it.
All right. Well, before we get into the specifics, I think that it's worth taking a second for people that don't religiously follow us on Twitter. And bless the hearts of those that do. But for those that don't and haven't seen our conversation there briefly, kind of walk very quickly through the whole idea about a signing day class is not bad just because everybody good came on board 3 months or 6 months or a year earlier. You know what I'm saying?
Or 2 years earlier.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
This is the thing. Like, There's a recency bias with recruiting, mm-hmm. and especially people who don't follow it all the time. And I don't follow it all the time, but I've been watching recruiting long enough to understand this. A 4-star commitment that Auburn got, you know, a year and a half ago has the same value as a 4-star commitment on signing day. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's much more dramatic when all these guys commit on signing day and it's exciting and you feel like there's positive momentum and stuff, but it doesn't make any difference. So, you know, guys like Calvin Ashley were committed a long time ago, and Carlito mm-hmm. Gonzalez and those kind of guys, they were committed like 2 years ago. Like in their junior year, they were committed to Auburn and they never wavered. And so if Calvin Ashley had committed on signing day, the Auburn internet would have erupted and people would have said it was the greatest thing in the history mm-hmm. of civilization. But because we had kind of had him in the bag for a long time, people had taken it for granted.
Right.
In the same way, like, you know, whenever 7 of these guys are already in school at Auburn. And I think so people had already taken them for granted because in their minds we already had them. And so they wanted, you know, more and more and more. So some of it is there's a perception issue with signing day where if you get a bunch of commitments that day, people think that matters more than commitments you got other places. And because there wasn't a bunch of signing day drama involving Auburn and a bunch of, you know, the day or two or the day of signing day or the day before, a bunch of commitments piling up, I think people were kind of lulled into the sense that Auburn's class wasn't good. But the reality is, you know what? Auburn was at 9th in the 24/7 mm-hmm. rankings, and that's pretty dang good. So
heck yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny how, I mean, it's perfectly encapsulated by how people reacted to Big Cat Bryant, right? Because he was not our best player that we signed this go round. He probably wasn't the third or fourth best player. And yet before we got him, people were kinda, you know, just kinda like,
please clap.
Yes.
And after we got him, and yet he was like the fifth best player we got.
I think that with him, and the other issue was because it was an area of need and people feel like we needed one more guy at a defensive end or whatever. But you're right in the sense that it was very much like, you know, he's a very good player, but he wasn't like with the crown jewel of the signing class or anything.
All right. So, all right. Well, let's get into the actual specifics. What did you think about overall in terms of signing day? How did it compare to previous years? I mean, we know in terms of numbers, but let's go beyond the numbers and talk about, like, you know, the actual players and what we needed and the needs we addressed and all that. Now, obviously, the biggest need we had was a quarterback that was both competent and sturdy. And we think, right, we think that we got that.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean,
beyond
and
that.
He's already in school in Jared Stidham.
And apparently, you know, seems to be a pretty stand-up guy. People seem to like him. He's not, you know, a head case. He seems to be a leader. He's got experience. That's the one thing. I mean, people were saying, well, you know, they thought the same thing about Jeremy Johnson. Yeah, but Jeremy Johnson didn't play most of a season as the starting quarterback, you know, of a Power 5 team. He saw spot action here and there. So Stidham has already had the weight of a program on his shoulders and done pretty well with it. Now, here's one thing I want to ask you about him, because I just can't – this is something that's puzzled me from the beginning. He keeps being labeled as a dual-threat quarterback. How am I supposed to see him as a dual – he's like the same size as Sean White.
He's much bigger than Sean White.
I've seen the – I saw – there was on signing day – Paul Ellen was standing there talking to Stidham, JF3, and Sean White, and honest to goodness, they all looked about the same size.
And this is the way I've seen looking at something now that lists him as 6'3", 215. He played in a spread offense in high school at Stevensville, Texas. It was, you know, it was a spread offense, and he ran the ball. You know, I mean, he ran for 1,800 yards and 29 touchdowns.
Wow. In 1 year or over his whole career?
I think it's his career.
All right.
But still, that's a lot of yardage for a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he passed for 6,500 yards and 80 touchdowns in high school. So it was a very prolific spread offense. I mean, you know, they're scoring 7-8 touchdowns a game. So he can run. I mean, and I saw him going back and watch this tape at Baylor when they were playing, when he was starting and playing Big 12 schools, and he ran in those games. And I think he's a little more solidly built than Sean White. I do think he's an interesting taller than Sean White.
Yeah.
And I think he's more athletic. You know, yeah, Sean White runs and he kind of looks like, you know, we've kind of joked about him look like he's, you know, on the verge of falling down, or he's, you know, being chased by chickens or something the whole time, and but Jared Stidham looks like, you know, a guy who knows what he's doing when he's running with the football. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The grass has been known to tackle Sean White, bless his heart.
Yes,
but
the other thing I want to say is that we signed this other quarterback out of Georgia, Malik Wills, and I'm kind of excited about him as a long term prospect. I mean, he's not going to be a guy that's going to factor in this year, but, you know, as a recruit, he looks a lot like Nick Marshall in high school.
Yeah.
I mean, that's who he looks like to me, watching his high school tape and reading about him, that he kind of is that kind of player. So, you know, you redshirt him this year, you know, he's on the bench next year, you know, fighting for, you know, second or third string or whatever, and we'll see down the road. But he's another guy that we have to add depth to a position where, you know, we talked last year about how it was a disaster, the depth, and now we added two players. You know, we've got Sean White coming back. JF3 didn't transfer. Woody Barrett redshirted last year, and he's
healthier and had some experience.
Healthy, and had, you know, has been through camp and everything. And, you know, Tyler Queen, if he's healthy, will be on the team too. So that's a lot of guys, you know.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I feel really good, though. This, you know, Jared Stidham was the number one need by a mile, and we got him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think him with this offensive coordinator, with the receivers, but also with the depth, where if something happens to him, Sean White could go in the game, and we know that he can make plays. And then, you know, if something, you know, if we're in a situation and they're both banged up and we got to play a, you know, whoever, a small school or something, we can play Woody Beard against him and rest both of those guys, whatever. So I feel really good about that.
Yeah, I feel like we've got a nice stable of quarterbacks now. We just need for them to develop. And with our new coach, I feel much better about that happening. Right. I mean,
yes.
we really did address just about every issue that we had coming into this into the off season by getting a quarterback developing offensive coordinator and a quarterback and a freshman quarterback too.
And an offensive coordinator we talked about who's going to, you know, juice up the passing game a little bit. I think with, you know, the receivers we have coming back and Stidham's ability to throw the ball deep. You know, we add that to the running game that we have, and I think the offense is going to be really dangerous. So we could talk about some of the other guys we got that factor into that.
Well, yeah, we got the two running backs, and when you add those two guys are a lethal combination. I mean, that's, you know, we don't really know exactly yet, but that could be a sort of a McFadden and Felix Jones combination because Alaric, I just think of the guy that conquered the Romans, right? he's a power guy that can blast away. And then
Devin Barrett
is the guy that has routinely run 90-yard runs from scrimmage for touchdowns. So the two of them together, man, I mean, you know, I like to say, you know, this is what we'll be taking into battle when we go to Penn State or play Oregon or whatever down the road a couple of years is these guys. And that makes me feel pretty good about it. You know, I said Woody Barrett and Devin Barrett are the Barrett and Sherrod offense. I'm looking forward to that someday.
But I do like – I mean, Devin Barrett is a guy that I think can be kind of the prototypical great Auburn tailback. I mean, I think he could be the guy, the every down kind of explosive back in the backfield that we've had in this offense. Mm-hmm. And both these guys are going to, you know, probably redshirt this year, put on weight because I think we have some other running backs. But you're in a situation where you turn around and, the other running backs are going to be gone, and these guys are going to be in competition for the starting job next, you know, a year from now.
That's right. Yeah, plus the Cam Martin, too. I really think we've undervalued him, and he's going to have a good year.
Yeah.
I feel like Cam Martin is – if we have a season that's reminiscent, not necessarily 14-0 of 2010, I don't want to get way ahead of myself here, but if we have a season where the team comes together on offense the way that the 2010 team – oh, I've killed him. I'm sorry. John?
Okay. Your 14-0 thing. I was drinking some water and I just. Sorry. A little too dramatic there.
I didn't mean to injure you with. No, I. Oh my gosh.
Sorry. Apologize.
It's my fault, clearly. Let me rephrase. Okay, what I was trying to say, I'm not saying in terms of 14-0 or anything like that. No. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is our offense in 2010 came together where we had a variety, a very diverse set of offensive skill players, and each of them sort of blossomed in their own way in the same season, right? I mean, like, and from different years, right? Like you had Ontario McCaleb, sure, as a sophomore, had a great year, but you had Fannin, Mario Fannin, yeah, as a senior, I believe.
Had Dyer was a freshman.
Yeah, Dyer's. You had all those guys just have basically almost career years in a way, all at the same time as they meshed. And that's what I was trying to get at is you know, if this year's team, I've almost totally forgotten now what I was trying to say with that point, but that if
you're
this,
going to Cam Martin.
Yeah, that I could see Cam Martin being almost like the Mario Fannin guy, like the second or third running back that maybe doesn't have 1,000 yards, but has a bunch of key plays. Hopefully doesn't fumble a bunch, but has a bunch of key plays here and there, especially catching the little dump passes and stuff like that, which I can see Lindsey running way more than Gus and Rhett. Rhett and Gus were never very big on screen passes or passes to the flat. They have run passes to the flat sometime in the past. And I've always talked about how, you know, one of the most effective plays we ran against Alabama in 2010 in the second half was when they figured out that they were rushing that defensive end in and stopping the handoff to McCaleb on the sweep. Instead, what we started doing was Cam would fake the handoff to McCaleb. The defensive end would have to choose, does he go after Cam or does he follow McCaleb? Well, he would go after Cam because Cam still had the ball, and Cam would just throw the ball over his head to McCaleb. I mean, it was very simple, but it was incredibly effective. That's not a kind of a play that Gus and Rhett traditionally like to run. The stuff they like to run seems to be more straightforward unless it's like insanely complicated, right? They have two flavors. They have vanilla and they have super pistachio rocky road, but they don't like to run a lot of chocolate chip, you know, or strawberry swirl. They're either like, you know, eight different versions of run the ball up the middle or like double reverse handoff backward pass wildcat, you know? They don't have a lot of like screen passes, for crying out loud. And so I'm looking forward to Lindsey maybe bringing in some just a little medium stuff, you know, not the stuff that's just totally basic and not the stuff where Gus says, I'm going to outthink everybody on the other team, but that middle ground, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Now, yeah. I know exactly what you're saying and I look forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think that's well said.
Well, who else on offense? I mean, obviously the
the two tight ends are the ones that I'm excited about.
Yeah. I mean, Salvatore, you like a Salvatore Cadella? Is that what you like here? This is horribly racist. I shouldn't be saying this kind of thing. I'm very sorry. I apologize to all of my fellow Italian fans out there. I'm sorry. What can I say? I'm making you some linguine, huh? I'm making you the pasta. You're going to get over it. Go ahead, John.
He only wants to be called Sal.
That's great. Sal Canella.
But, I mean, he's like 6'5", 225. He's a thin guy that he's going to add a little weight on. But, you know, big, tall, rangy, you know, pretty quick, kind of athletic tight end who could jump up and get the ball. I think on signing day, Stan White made the comparison that, like, this guy is the same size as, like, Mike Williams, the receiver, when he was at Texas A&M.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, he's not as – obviously not as fast as Mike Williams. But, you know, in the red zone, you could see what a weapon that could be. If you have, you know, three other receivers on the field or even four receivers in the field, you put him in there, you know, you could get him on a smaller defensive back and throw the ball up to him, and you have a real chance there. So – and I like the other guy they got, Shanker – 6'3", 240, and he's, you know, more of a traditional Auburn tight end. They always compare him to Lutzenkirchen, but.
But before we go too far afield, let me just say so that I don't have to go back and edit all that out a minute ago where I was trying to be funny. I'm partly Italian. My favorite soccer team is the Italy national soccer team other than the U.S. I've got like seven Italian soccer jerseys in my closet. God bless Italy. I love Italy. Okay. Please don't be all insulted. Right. Moving on.
We got it.
So we got two good tight ends. That's outstanding. That's two more than we've had in a while.
Well, one of them is a JUCO guy. So it's not like right. The Shanker guy could redshirt or he could be a backup and, you know, that kind of thing. But I think you don't recruit a JUCO tight end unless you're planning to use him. And so
I think
Canella is going to be part of the offense.
Did you get the sense that as soon as Lindsey arrived, he said, get me some tight ends? I mean, I know that we had Canella was already kind of on the hook a little bit, but this other guy was basically – didn't Lindsey just go right out and get him immediately like the first thing he did when he got in his office, I think?
Oh, yeah. Now, this guy was definitely somebody that you know didn't have Auburn really on our radar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, he – he made, you know, made it a priority. He went, and he was like, this is the guy, kind of guy I want for my offense. So, yeah, you know, got him.
That was the impression I got. Well, we got some great offensive linemen, Brahms and Calvin Ashley, obviously, and Troxel. Didn't Brahms and Troxel both get seriously injured, though, or having a rehab or something? It seems like.
Yeah, I mean, they both were injured. I think their senior year in high school. Ashley's the one who's the, you know, the five-star offensive tackle, All-American, you know, the highest-rated guy in the class, and the guy that, you know, we need tackles, so there's the chance that he could come in and play next year at tackle. I mean, it doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen, and he has a lot of ability. And he's a guy that's been committed to Auburn for, you know, again, from Washington, D.C. metro area, he's been committed to Auburn for like 2 years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So it's not a small thing.
Well, also, before we get off the offense, we've got a couple of receivers, Noah Igbinoghi, who's a really fast guy, and then
and who just set the Alabama State record in the long jump, I think.
Nice. I know he's fast. And then Jatarvius Whitlow, who's supposedly like the big sleeper.
He was the big signing day surprise.
One of them.
You know, he's from right down the road from Auburn, and I think was kind of the – was considering some smaller schools, but when you watch the highlights of him, that guy made a bunch of plays with the ball in his hands. He made a lot of guys miss, and you know, was very dangerous. And I think he's a guy that the new offensive coordinator came in and go, you know, if I had one scholarship left, I'd take that guy. And so he's, you know, maybe a developmental guy. Like, he's from a much smaller school and hasn't played against the high level of competition that some of these other guys have. But, you know, maybe you redshirt him in a year from now. This guy's like comes out and he's a very dangerous guy. We get him, like you're saying, we get him the ball and some sweeps, some dump offs, that kind of thing. And he's making guys like, as a punt returner. I mean, this could be, maybe he comes in and takes a shot as a punt returner or kick returner his freshman year, too. So,
you know where he's from? You just said he's from Lafayette. I know it's spelled Lafayette, as in the famed General Lafayette, the Marquis Lafayette, but we say Lafayette.
In Alabama, it's Lafayette.
It's Lafayette. That's right. Defense. We got Big Cat. He is officially now Big Cat Bryant.
That's just funny.
It's great. Didn't we get one other defensive lineman, and I'm just not seeing him?
Well, I mean, we had a guy committed for a long time, Alec Jackson, who's from Montgomery, who's probably going to be a defensive end. And then we had another guy on signing day, Tyrone Truesdale, who's like a 6'3", 335 from Augusta, Georgia. And, you know, a big, solid, productive defensive lineman from Georgia. And I could see him being a guy to redshirt at a year from now. He's a rotation guy, a defensive tackle, providing good quality depth. And you got to have some of those guys. You got to have some of those guys that can stand in there against the run and make plays. So.
Heck yeah. Good linebacker class. Best linebacker class we've probably had in, what, a decade?
Well, I mean, I don't know. The class that's making a bunch of plays right now is pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They were unheralded, though. I mean, Trey Williams? Yeah, he got a little bit, but he was the only one. I mean, I know that basically the entire group of them right now has been doing really well, but they were not as well regarded coming in as they've turned out to be. Whereas this group are all like home runs, right? Especially Moultrie.
I mean, Moultrie is the headliner, but they're all really good. I mean, KJ Britt, Chandler Wooten, I mean, those guys are, you know, anybody in the country would take those guys to play linebacker for them. And Moultrie's a guy who could play inside, could play outside, but they're talking about playing him at the buck kind of defensive end position that Carl Lawson played. So
yeah, he and Big Cat both are talking about buck. That'd be interesting. I mean, if you don't need him at linebacker, if he's going to sit on the bench, you might as well get him out there and say, go get that quarterback, right?
That's right. And I mean, he's a, you know, he's an athletic guy. He's very explosive, and I love the linebackers. I mean, that's the absolute strongest part of this class.
Yeah,
I think these guys are all studs, and I think they're going to be. I think they next year could be guys who could be on special teams and be kind of like headhunters for Auburn, mm-hmm. who run around on special teams and make the tackles and do stuff. And they're the backups for the guys we have now, the Trey Williams and Deshaun Davises. You know, they could come in and relieve them or play in the games so that are the blowouts and that kind of stuff. But I feel really, really good about the future of linebacker because I think these guys can all play and they're kind of solid guys and guys that were, you know, committed to Auburn for a while and were out helping recruit other guys to this class. So.
Mm-hmm. Defensive back, we got several. We got Askew and Carlito Gonzalez, Trayvon Leonard, Jordan Peters. It's a pretty good group, right? Pretty decent.
I mean, I think it's better. I think it's one of those things like there's good quality depth, and it's better than people think. I mean, Askew's a guy that, you know, is an early signee. He's a, you know, was the number one cornerback in the state of Alabama and a four-star prospect on Scout. And, you know, is a very good player. He's explosive, played quarterback on offense, a cornerback, you know, on defensive back on defense. And, you know, he's an excellent player. And I think Carlito Gonzalez is a guy from Stone Mountain, Georgia, that played, you know, big school football in the Atlanta area. And that's a guy that, you know, McGriff and Muschamp identified early on when they were at Auburn that they wanted him, and he committed to Auburn then and has been committed ever since.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of schools try to get him away. So, I mean, I really like this defensive back class. I think we needed some, you know, long-term kind of quality depth. We have a bunch of guys there right now, but a bunch of those guys are getting ready to be, you know, to turn over and be gone, and we need to kind of the next wave. And these guys are in it. I feel good about safety, especially, and I think Askew could definitely come in and play corner. He's not the biggest guy, but I think he's definitely athletic enough and explosive enough to play corner, and kind of got that, you know, the fluidity you need to have as an athlete to be able to play corner in the SEC. I think he's got that. So,
and then special teams, we got Little Carlson, so that their granddad or whoever can really be pulling his hair out to follow in his brother's footsteps. That'll be cool. They'll be together on campus for a year, and then the senior Carlson will go off to the NFL, hopefully, and after finally winning the Groza Award, right? And Anders will just step right in and pick up where he left off.
We can only hope.
Yeah, I hope so. But it seems like it. I like that he came from – it has him listed as coming from Pike National Forest, Colorado. It's like he didn't actually come from a high school. He came from a national – it's like we signed Bigfoot. And he is kind of Bigfoot, right? Because that's what he does.
He walked out of the woods.
Yeah. He's like Bigfoot. He's like – Did he come from Pike National Forest High School? No. He just came out of Pike National Forest, Colorado. Yeah. Just wandered out one day and a trucker picked him up, and you should be kicking footballs with that foot, son. And off he comes down to Auburn. But that's pretty cool. So, yeah, there's our – did we miss anybody? We got the long snapper.
Invited to walk on long snapper Bill Taylor.
Yep, from Tuscaloosa. I've heard of it.
And he's, you know, I think they identified that guy early on as a special teams guy they wanted, and they went out and got him. And so, yeah, he's going to be there. And then we have a couple guys who are – Tayshawn Manning is actually going to be counted in the scholarships for this class because he had come down with cancer, and he's gone through the treatments, and now he's back on campus putting weight back on and ready to start playing football again. So.
What about Brodarius Ham? Is he going to count the same way, or is he?
He counted on last year's class, but he's the same thing where he's coming back and he's expected to be in spring practice too. So
yeah, okay, well that's cool. So that's another offensive lineman we weren't even counting on having that we'll have. There.
That's right. And Manning is another defensive end that people have kind of forgotten about too. So
yeah.
That's another guy that's going to be fighting for playing time at that spot.
Very nice, very nice. So what do you think about our overall roster right now? I mean, what weaknesses do you see the most in our overall roster with this new group coming in?
It's a good question. I think we have quality depth, I think, is really there. I mean, I worry about tackle. I mean, in terms of, like, on the field next year, I worry about offensive tackle. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of good pass rushers who graduated and left the SEC, but there's a lot who are still there.
Yeah.
You know, and there's always going to be new guys in the SEC who can rush the quarterback. So that's a, and for this offense to work, I mean, you can't have the quarterback getting, you know, hit all the time. So I think that worries me. And then I think somebody's got to step up at in pass rusher. You know, somebody's got to make the plays that Lawson and Adams made in disrupting the other team's offense. So that's on all of the guys on defense, but especially the defensive linemen to step up and make those plays. So that's the two things I think. I mean, I think we got a lot of talent at receiver. And they've got a lot of talent at running back, got a lot of talent at quarterback. Defensive back, again, we got a lot of talented players and a lot of depth, and a linebacker. So I'm not so worried about those positions. But I think tackle and really the pass rushing end are the two spots that we're back. And again, we know the special teams are going to be very good with who we got coming back. So, I mean, I feel really good about the depth. And I think we have a lot of really good younger players. A lot of the best guys on the team are kind of redshirt freshmen or sophomores. I think that's a pretty good group. And the other thing I always like to do at this time is think about, you know, who are the guys? It's because we don't just get these guys. We get the guys that we signed last year who redshirted and didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, as an example, Nick Coe was a big defensive end recruit last year. He's from, he was the North Carolina State heavyweight wrestling champion.
All right.
Marquise McLean's another receiver we haven't seen.
That's right.
Marlon characters, a safety that people really liked, supposedly in the practices before the Sugar Bowl, people were saying good things about him. Javon Myers is another defensive back that, you know, was redshirted last year. So those kind of guys. Austin Jackson is a big defensive tackle who redshirted last year, who's going to be plugged right in and probably be second team defensive tackle this year. So those guys, you know, were in the weight program. They were practicing. They've been in practice, you know, in the Sugar Bowl practices. And so they're going to be in spring practice. They're going to be ready to go and have a leg up on all these freshmen and probably much more likely to get playing time than some of these guys that just walked, you know, was signed last week. So,
yeah,
that's the other thing about the people think it's just the guys we had last year and these guys we signed today. But there's also this other group that was here last year, but we've kind of forgotten about because they were redshirting.
And that's a nice luxury, too, to have is that we forget there's like a whole half of a class. Mm-hmm. This was something that Barrett Salih was pointing out on his show this morning. That was the day after the conversation where Warbloggle, Barrett Salih, and I all revealed that we all subscribed to each other's shows, which I thought was kind of funny. But Barrett Salih was pointing out that, I don't know if you've heard this, when was the last time Auburn had a 1,000-yard receiver? You didn't hear. Good. Okay.
Now, I didn't hear Darvin Adams.
See, that was a thing. I would have thought so. Or I would have thought, what's his name from just a couple of years ago that went to the Steelers?
No. I know he didn't have that many yards.
But Darvin was close. Darvin had 900 and something. And another receiver
I'm going to say Obamanu or Romeshudu.
You'd think, but no. See, that's the thing is that in the years that we have a good receiver, we usually have two or three good receivers. And they each get like 500, 600, 700, 800, 900 yards. The last time we had just the one good receiver, and honestly, that's not true. The last time we had just the one good receiver was 2006
Hold on.
2006. Now think about this. In 2002, we brought in like four or five stud receivers and we redshirted one of them, Courtney Taylor, because he was a quarterback and the others were all receivers. So Anthony Mix and Obamanu and Romeshudu and another one, I forget, all played in 02, 03, 04, and 05. That's why in 2005, Brandon Cox had that awesome receiving core to throw to, even with, you know, Cadillac and Ronnie Brown gone, he still had a great offense because he had all those receivers that were seniors. But Courtney Taylor was the only junior because he got redshirted in 2002. That was our last great receiver class before the one we have now of just, you know, studs across the board. So I would have said, what year did we have just the one really good receiver? I would have said 2006 because he was the only one left that year. But I don't think he – but he didn't. The last time we had a receiver get over 1,000 yards was indeed Ronnie Daniels in 1999 because he was the whole offense that year.
He was. He was so great.
Yeah.
And I think he had 1,000 yards against just Georgia.
Just Georgia. That's my Georgia announcer reacting to what you just said. Georgia announcer, do you remember the Ronnie Daniels game?
Oh, my God!
Oh, that was great. What did John, here's a riddle for you. What did Georgia fans do in the weeks after that 99 Auburn game?
I don't know.
Smoke weed every day.
I think my speaker's officially died now. Dang it.
Oh, darn.
Well, we're coming up on needing it for the next segment. So, well, I can't tell if it's on or not. I'll say that again. What did Georgia fans do after the Ronnie Daniels game?
Smoke weed every day.
Oh, that has a much better bass to it. See, when the big speaker's working, it just sounds a lot better. All right. So, do we have listener questions? I forgot to ask.
I asked. We have a few.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
You know the dun, dun, dun thing that Mira did there was totally ad-libbed. I told her just to say it's time for listener questions on the, you know, and she's a performer. What can you say? What we got? Fire it up.
All right. First question comes from Auburn Elvis.
Up. What we got from Auburn Elvis?
He says, I like that intro. He says, I read that every college football playoff team has had a top 10 recruiting class the year before. Do our collection of recruiting rankings pass this threshold? Also, what do you think Auburn's ceiling and floor are for next season?
He's wanting us to go ahead and do like the July show in February. It's July and February at Jack's TV.
I mean, I do believe very strongly in the – there's a guy for Bleacher Report named Bud Elliott who does the – not Bleacher Report. Who does the – he writes for Tom Hawk Nation, the Florida State Place, and he does this national recruiting ranking.
Ugh.
And he does this national recruiting coverage for them. And – he basically does this thing where he calculates the ratio of 4 and 5 stars to other guys in your roster, and he calls it the blue chip ratio. And he publishes this every year. And basically, no team has won the national title in the last whatever 15 years without, you know, being over 50% 4 and 5 star players in your roster.
Right.
And there's only about 10 teams that make it every year.
And we're one of them.
It's always. And anyhow, Auburn was on that list last year, and they'll be on the list again next year. So
that's right. We're there. It's good. I mean, in a sport where there's 120-something teams and like 12 have a chance to really win the prize ever, it's good to be one of the 12.
That's right.
And, you know, it's like the World Cup. I think about this all the time. It's like the World Cup. You know, the last – it's so crazy. Out of all the countries, like 200 countries in the world that play soccer, and sometimes the U.S. is one of them, and, judging by our men's team. And out of all that, it's the same dang 7 or 8 teams that always win. And do you know what was the last year that a team not from Europe and not Brazil won the World Cup?
And Argentina win it like 30 years ago?
Yeah, like 78. 86. Argentina in 86. And if you throw in Argentina and Brazil and Europe, I don't think there's ever been another to win it. So it's the same thing.
Mexico
it's
like, did never win it.
No, they've never won it. No. What? So nobody in Africa, nobody in Asia, nobody in North America, nobody Australia, nobody Antarctica, just Europe and South America. That's it. And just three countries in South America. But my point is the SEC is like Europe and the ACC and the Big Ten are like South America. And that's about it.
Yeah. Maybe Southern Cal in there, but that's about it. Yeah.
Yeah. They can be Uruguay.
All right. Do you want to have any? You want to say anything about his other question about what do you think are the floor and ceiling for this class?
Oh man, I don't think this is an undefeated team we're building, but I think it has a chance. I think it has a chance to get to Atlanta if the ball bounces right and the kick is returned on the last second field goal and that kind of stuff. This team just has a much more solid foundation than 2013 did, don't you think?
Well, that's the thing. I think the defense last year was solid, was very, very good and consistent good, and I don't think that's going to disappear overnight. I mean, I think we have a very experienced, talented group on defense, a lot of guys who played a lot of snaps last year, and just because Lawson and Adams are gone doesn't mean the defense is going to disappear overnight and, you know, disintegrate back to being terrible. So I think the defense is solid, and so the offense, again, just has to be competent, and I think they can be better than competent. I think we have a lot of talent at running back, and I think we have, you know, with better quarterback play and – you know, being a little more creative in the passing game, I think we score a lot of points on people.
I think we got more depth at the positions, more experience at the receiver position.
Yes.
More depth at running back than we had at some points in the season. I mean, Malik Miller will be back healthy. Yeah, I mean, we'll have the players that were hurt back. Petway and Malik Miller will be there. You got Cam Martin, and, of course, you got Kerryon Johnson. And, I mean, I don't know if we got a Trey Mason anywhere on this team, but we got a whole lot of almost, you know. I mean, I feel like a two-loss season is maybe the ceiling.
Well, I mean, the ceiling is they could win every game they play. Let's say
That's a good way to put it.
I mean, you know, do I think that's likely to happen? No. But in the possible outcomes, that is one end, and the other end possible outcome is like, you know, I don't know.
Well, the
other quarterbacks all transfer away because Stidham gets the job, and then he gets hurt week two, and we don't have any quarterbacks left, and we go 4-8 with the quarterbacks.
That's it. Yes, the other quarterbacks don't have to transfer away. They can just be there and play, man. I mean, but Stidham breaks his leg in week two. God, I'm knocking on wood. I mean.
Wherever you are listening to this podcast, stop what you're doing and knock on some
wood. Knock on wood, yeah. I mean, then you're looking at like 7-5 or something. So, but no, I don't think we should dwell on that. I feel much better. What else we got in there? Thank you, Elvis.
All right. The next question comes from Albis, who says, hi, Van and John. Thanks for your podcast. I will enjoy them. Who besides Stidham will have the greatest impact as a first-year player in this signing class? I think this is a good question.
Ooh, that is a good – any question that makes me have to go, wait a minute, scroll, wait a minute. Dang, man. I mean, it could be TD.
I have my answer. You want to think about it? My answer?
Go ahead.
My answer is Sal Cannella, the JUCO tight end. I think he's the guy – other than Stidham, I think he's going to have the most impact next year. And I'm not talking about, again, 1,000 yards or 60 catches or anything, but he might have, you know, 24 catches and 8 touchdowns or something.
That's interesting. That's very I would not even remotely agree with you except for Lindsey.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very interesting. All right, I'll give you that one's a possibility. It you know, you think about, well, running back is the type of player that can go out there and have an immediate impact, except we don't usually put freshman running backs out there and let them play.
Well, We don't need them this year.
Well, we don't need them anyway. That's right. I mean, you know. But let's put it this way. I haven't looked at the schedule lately, but if we play like a Louisiana Tech or Louisiana Monroe or somebody like that, then, you know, Devin Barrett might have 300 yards. But otherwise, no. The other one that I could think of is Tadarian Moultrie. If he works out as the buck, right? I mean, it could be Big Cat, but I just for some reason feel like Tadarian Moultrie, if they could just stick him out there in situational, you know, moments and let him rush the passer, he could have an impact as a freshman.
And we saw a freshman defensive end make a big impact last year.
Yes, we did. We sure did. We also saw a freshman defensive end make a big impact in 2013.
It's true. So that was a good question. His other question is, can you say Noah's last name correctly three times fast?
All right, here we go. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but...
Igbinyane?
That's once.
Igbinyane?
Igbinyane, Igbinyane, Igbinyane. Hey! Hold on.
Please clap.
Our next question comes from Rusty Owens. He says, not a question, just take a minute to talk about the state of Auburn basketball. I want to start here.
And I say
on Saturday night, it was huge. We swept Alabama.
Oh!
Beat them in Tuscaloosa.
Yes, we did. That was glorious. We almost messed up at the end, but we stuck it out.
A little too close at the end, but it was one of those. It was a game we got, you know, dramatically out rebounded, but the team shot like 70% in the first half, and it was a big win, and especially
going 70% 3-pointers or whatever will do a lot of wonders for you. You can't expect that every week, of course, but shooting like, you know, we were over 50% 3-pointers most of the game.
Well, and of course Spencer was hurt and didn't play.
Yeah.
So, you know, playing a team as big and physical as Alabama without him was a huge, you know, that was a big setback. But, you know, it was a great win, and I don't think this is going to happen, okay? But I'm just going to lay this right here. The Auburn basketball team is playing, has a lot of big wins over quality opponents this year.
They do.
You know, they have a lot of losses too, but they're playing well. They could still, you know, I think still has a chance to finish 500 in conference maybe. But like on the USA Today projected field of 64 teams today, they were listed as a bubble team with about 15 other teams.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I wasn't even sure if they were on the NIT bubble.
Well, it's because they played a very, very hard schedule.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of good wins against those teams. So I'm looking up RPI right now.
If they had, you know, the ones that really get under my skin are when they lost to Boston College that they shouldn't have, and when they lost to Georgia. I mean, and they just got run by Georgia. And then when I saw them getting killed by Vanderbilt, I just thought, oh, well, Vanderbilt's good at basketball. And I saw Vanderbilt's like got the same record we do or worse. So we just never play Vandy very well in basketball. And we don't play them well in football in Nashville, to be honest with you.
We are 63rd in RPI.
All right, I'll take that. Well, I feel like they're getting better, though. You know, I mean, Austin Wiley makes a huge difference as he plays better. And it really just comes down to them not being so erratic, because they'll go down the court one play and do something phenomenal. And you're just like, holy cow, this is an NCAA tournament team. And they'll come down the next time and just throw the ball over somebody's head out of bounds. It just makes pull my hair out the way they'll do that sometime. They're so schizophrenic. But that's because of youth. Right, don't you think? I mean, 90% of that is youth.
It is youth. And the one that drives me crazy is nobody wants to do anything, so I'm just going to take this ill-advised three-pointer from the top of the key.
I'm
just going to chuck it.
They don't even get to the nobody wants to do anything. They just dribble across the mid-stripe and go, oh, what the heck? Bonk. Oh, man. Yes. Oh, so, that drives me crazy. See, there's a difference, though. Against Alabama, those were going in.
Yes.
That's the only reason we beat Alabama is that those were going in. Because if it hit the rim and bounced off, we were not getting the rebound.
So I don't think we're going to make the NCAA tournament. But, you know, you could see this team win some games down the stretch as they come together. You could see them play well in the NCAA tournament. I mean, the SEC tournament, win a couple of games. And, I think an NIT berth and being on the bubble for the NCAA is likely. I'd kind of hope we build on that next year.
It's been so long since we've had postseason basketball. That would be so nice. And here's a cool thing, too. Is this is just one class, basically. I mean, I know you got Lang and, you know, a couple other guys, Horace, but this is one class. I mean, bring in two more recruiting classes like this, and where will we be in 2 years? I mean, I know that
we got some studs coming in next year.
Well, I mean, I know that one or two of them will probably be gone by then, but I get our two point guards mixed up because they're both about the same size. They kind of look similar.
Harper and Ronnie Johnson.
And Mustafa Heron. I was thinking about Harper and Heron. Harper and Heron, they both have like short names that start with H, and they're both really good. And I kind of get them mixed up when I can't see the number or the name, but they are both. I mean, and Harper, my gosh, he's just been on fire. Never misses free throws. Hits, knocks down the threes when he needs to. Controls the ball. Doesn't turn the ball over. How long has it been since we had a point guard that could do that? He is the point guard, right?
He's the point guard. And he's the little guy. But drives in the lane and makes the shot when you think he has no chance to get the ball up even. So.
Do you know the reason why I'm not sure he's the point guard? It's because we basically half the time play like five point guards out there, it seems like, or five shooting guards. You know, it's just because they're not a big, heavy group. I mean, Wiley's kind of big. And Spencer, but I mean, other than that, it's like, you know, and I mean, Purifoy is a little taller than some of them, but other than that, it's like a bunch of guards out there running around, and that's why they all have the shoot first mentality sometimes too. But you know, they got it rolling now, and maybe they'll just keep on keeping on. They certainly knew who to beat this week. That's for sure.
That's right, and that's right. Swept Alabama, that's the most important thing.
Yes, always.
The last question comes from Pat Ringer, who says,
"Hey, heard of him.
Is 24 hours after an event too late to roll tumors? An example is rolling it Sunday night for the Saturday night basketball win."
Was he like going to roll it for the Falcons and pretend it was for the basketball game? Is that what it was?
No, you missed. Like late in the game, I was talking about how nervous I was, and he's like, "Don't worry about it. I'm going to roll tumors corner now."
Oh yeah. Well, let's don't even go there.
No.
I've already put it behind me and turned a corner.
I have not, but I don't want to talk about it.
I find myself the last few months, certain things happen late in the evening on one night, and I have to go to bed trying to go to sleep, thinking about it or not thinking about it. And the next day, just putting it entirely out of my head and thinking about, like, you know, the Avengers or something. It's the only way I can cope this year. So off we go. Was that our last question?
That's it.
Let's see. We got a little bit.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
That way, with our wheels. So, good old number 16. What's up with number 16 down at LSU, John?
He's no longer employed by LSU.
Number 16 has been 86th by LSU. What was that? I mean, they just got him down there a year ago.
Well, but I think Les Miles brought him down there, and Les Miles isn't the coach anymore. And I think, you know, he and Orgeron didn't get along, apparently. And Orgeron's the coach now. And I think Orgeron – and also, like, again, they brought in a new offensive coordinator, so some of it may have been the new offensive coordinator and his relationship with Damian. But he's – you know, it was funny because – Alabama's wide receiver coach had left and gone to Arizona State to replace Chip Lindsey as the offensive coordinator, Billy Napier. And so they were looking there. They need to hire a wide receiver coach. And there was, you know, some Auburn message board discussion about them hiring Damian Craig. And, you know, then LSU basically let Damian Craig go.
it's going to say a whole lot about how Damian Craig is regarded as a receivers coach if Alabama does not hire him. Don't you think?
Well, I think you're right, probably. I think Damian Craig is a really good recruiter, mm-hmm. and I think he's a good guy, but I think he also, you know, wants to have more say in offense and stuff wherever he goes. And I think if he wants to do that and be taken seriously doing that, then he needs to take the Rhett Lashley route and mm-hmm. go to a smaller place and be the offensive coordinator. If he stays in the SEC, he's going to be a recruiter, and that's what people are going to view him as.
This is going to sound weird. I can almost see Damian Craig more as a head coach of a small team somewhere than as like a coordinator or a position coach going forward. I can almost see him going like to Buffalo, you know, or like Eastern Washington or something like that, and being a very good recruiter who could bring in players and then have a staff. You know what I mean? He could kind of set the tempo and be like the cool guy with swagger with his sunglasses and everything, but not have to be a technical coach like that.
I see that.
That kind of, and I would be happy. I would be very unhappy if he ends up at Alabama. But it would be say a lot, I think, about him right now if they pass on him. Now, the thing that's funny to me is he went to LSU because he wanted to learn from the great master, the offensive genius of Les Miles. Remember, I mean, that's basically what he said. That was what he said when he left Auburn. Was he wanted to go and learn from the great coach Les Miles? I guess that means that Damian needed to learn new ways to run the ball up the middle with a fullback. he thought there were no more ways to do that than Gus was doing, you know. But that I guess he doesn't look at Orgeron and see a great offensive genius he can learn from, huh?
Well, I think their new offensive coordinator is a lot better than the guy they got rid of, so I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well. So you said the Arizona State hired the receiver coach basically to replace our new offensive coordinator, right?
Cristobal. That's right. Who was the offensive line coach and recruiting coordinator at Alabama, I think. And so he's at Oregon now. And so that's a big loss. He's a really, really good recruiter. And so that's a setback for Alabama losing him and Napier. But I mean, they got plenty of guys. They'll grab somebody.
I liked what the Oregon, the new Oregon coach said in a big long article we were talking. Did you read it and send it to me or something? But he was saying how he walks into that great big office that Nike basically built in Eugene,
mm-hmm.
and he looks around. He says, "You know what all this is? This is no excuses."
That's true.
That's pretty good.
I mean, you're in a place that's the thing with being a head coach is. You go to a place like that, you know, where the facilities that you got everything you could ask for, and it's tough to have excuses. So
there you go. It's going to be interesting to see Oregon not running their wacky, crazy offense. Where do you think little Paul Feinbaum Jr. is going to end up?
I don't know. I mean, he hasn't. I think he's going to sit out a year and try to be a head coach somewhere else. So, you know, maybe I think he'd make a smaller school in the West Coast somewhere.
I think it's funny that he and Kelly are both unemployed, right?
Mm-hmm. It is weird.
So both, you know, basically there's going to be a team in the next year that makes a move for Kelly, and when they don't get Kelly, they're going to, like, take him.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's lining up to get him. I mean,
yeah.
I think he's a good offensive coordinator, but their year last year had a very –
Chizik?
Gene Chizik 2012 feel.
That's what I knew you were going. I knew you were going there, yeah.
And so that's why, like, I wouldn't hire him to run a major college program.
Oh. God. The last couple of things. Arkansas has gotten rid of a coach, a defensive line coach. What's up with that?
I mean, their defense was terrible last year. And it's one of these things that colleges do that's bad. I mean, it's like the stuff LSU just did. Like, they wait till after signing day, till the kids sign, and they don't have any choice, and they made a connection with the coaches, and then they fire the coaches. And so, you know, LSU fired the running back coach and the and Damian, and Arkansas fired their defensive line coach.
Well, I'm glad that Lashley left before signing day. I mean, because everybody knew exactly what was going on. I mean, now we didn't fire him, but then if you talk to certain Auburn people, we kind of did.
They
think we put him on the plank, like we were a pirate ship, right? And we put Lashley on the plank. And we shoved sword tips at him. And hey, look, Connecticut just floated by under the plank. And he landed right there in Hartford or whatever. I don't know of any other cities in Connecticut. Stamford. He landed right there in ESPNville. So, remind me sometime we have more time. I'll tell the story in the off season of how ESPN came to be, because the whole Connecticut thing is hilarious, but I'll tell you later. And then finally, Ole Miss. Good Lord, Ole Miss.
Ole Miss had a very bad recruiting class. And, you know, their coaches were like, oh, it's terrible, all this negative recruiting other schools have done against us. But, you know, the one thing that kind of separated them the last couple of years was the talent they were bringing in, especially like offensive and defensive linemen. And they didn't get those five-star guys this year.
Well, there's some of their skill players have been the best that Ole Miss has ever had, like the great receiver.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my gosh.
They have a lot of good receivers the past couple of years.
Yeah, they have. And they have a couple of good quarterbacks that could throw it. But they've got to be falling off a cliff coming up soon, right? I mean, they're reverting back to their norm, aren't they? Don't you think? Or are they going to find a way to put together another...
No, I think they're reverting back. I mean, I think that's when I look at the West, I see
Mississippi State
has fallen back from the Dak Prescott peak to kind of their historical, you know, norm under the current coach. And I think Ole Miss has fallen back. They're not going to be the challenger. Their window to win the SEC West is closing. I mean, it was kind of there, and it's, you know, it's closing for them. And I think it's going back to be kind of Auburn, Alabama, LSU. So.
And Arkansas is kind of not what they – for a minute, we thought Arkansas might be on the rise. But I think, no, they're kind of subsiding. And again, I like to just point this out. Ole Miss has never, never won the West, never been to Atlanta. And other than Texas A&M, they're the only one, right, in the West.
That's it.
And – they don't have the excuse, oh, we just joined the conference in 2012. So, you know, Ole Miss is like, well, we haven't been to Atlanta, but we did just join the SEC in 1912. You know, so, but that's pretty sad. I know Ole Miss has had two opportunities, right? Eli Manning and then this last run. And they couldn't quite climb the mountain either time.
Well, I mean, again, let's be clear. 2 years ago, 4th and 23,
golly,
Arkansas converted them, and that is why Alabama won the SEC and went on to the playoff and won the national title.
And why Ole Miss has never been to Atlanta.
That play, if Arkansas doesn't make that play, Ole Miss wins the West and they go to that title game and win the SEC.
And play in they've gotten the national championship game? Well,
they might have been in the playoffs. It would have been under consideration. I'm not sure they would have been in, but it would have been talked about.
Dang.
Yeah. Burt.
If he's done nothing else in his career except win a couple of Rose Bowls.
Yeah, Alabama better be mailing him like thank you cards every other day.
Guarantee you they are clueless about what you just said. They have no idea. They just know that they won because they tied. They tied, and so they won. They don't care nothing about that. It reminds me, I always talk about the 2002 Auburn-Georgia game. That's the game where both teams in the championship game in Atlanta changed because of one play in one game. I don't think that's ever happened before since. I always say if somebody can tell me of another moment where one play in one game flipped both teams, East and West, in the championship game, then let me know, because otherwise I think that, and I never hear anybody else pointing that out. I feel like it's this crazy statistic that I figured out years ago and I talk about and nobody else has ever noticed, right? That both teams flipped. It would have been Auburn versus Florida in the 2002 game instead of Georgia versus Arkansas. So, well, anyway, All right. Any last thoughts before we wrap up our National Signing Day extravaganza?
No, just, you know, nice to have off season and looking forward to talking about basketball and the Wishbone Awards and other stuff in future weeks.
Yeah, we got the Wishbone Awards coming up probably in our next episode. This will be like our fourth or fifth year of doing them, where we present not only like our standard awards, but we have a few kind of wacky fun ones too. And then in the next episode after that, we've been trying to do this for like 3 years, and we always end up not doing it. In addition to maybe getting an interview or two, because usually we have Brandon on, you know, and we've had Scott Nicky on. We'll get an interview or two for this spring coming up. But also we want to do our basketball show where we don't just talk about the current basketball. We talk about kind of the history of Auburn basketball for people out there that don't really know that Auburn has had, you know, two or three pretty darn good many eras of basketball going back at least to the 80s, and we'll talk about that a little bit, so that'll be fun. I want to thank everybody who picked up copies of our books in December. Lorendo had a pretty darn good December sales-wise, it looked like, and we sold a couple copies of our old standbys. We really got to do a new book, John. I say this every year, every month, but we really got to do a new book one of these days. You can get something new out there. So, all right. Well, our time is up, and we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle. Becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
You can't hear the music playing behind me, can you?
I can.
How is that possible? That's the same track that the sound effects board uses, John. You shouldn't be able to hear it.
The miracle of modern technology.
I don't think miracle's the word I would use.
Curse?
Yeah, it's closer.
Nothing.
See, that's what happens. It lasts for about 5 seconds, and then it cuts it off for some reason. I was getting excited there for a second, but I've got the little speaker.
This is what it does, though. It gets your hopes up, and then it crushes.
Every time, yeah. I have to go with our little Bluetooth. Figure we'll want it tonight, you know. Well, define want. Oh, no. I have a feeling some of this is going to end up in the post-show portion of the program.
Go to bed.